let's get back to work.
Perek Gimel. I think we started last week, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Is it posted? I think I posted it. We went through the Perek itself, and we talked primarily about the introductory three verses, comparing them to the last three verses, the sense of mission, exposition on Shmuel, who he was, where he came from, Vayner Shmuel Mesharet et Hashem, describing him as the Mesharet for Eli, the waning of prophecy, Dvar Hashem Haya Yakar, Vayamim Mehem, and the sense, the presence of Shmuel in the Mishkan, Shmuel sleeping, Eli in his place, Shmuel in his place, the sense of the candle, all of that sort of set up for the moment when Shmuel has his first nevuah. We then read through the nevuah itself. We're going to spend a little more time this week and next week talking about the substance of Shmuel's nevuah. Danny, you look like you're about to ask a question.
No.
Oh, okay. Looked like you were. So, we go back to this nevuah itself. Vayikra Hashem el Shmuel, the first paragraph is the storyline, if you will. Shmuel is sleeping, he hears God's voice, God calls to him, and he thinks it's Eli calling, he runs to Eli, comes back. Eli says to him, no, it's not me, I didn't call you, goes back and he lies down. A second time, he hears a voice, goes running to Eli, Eli says, no, it's not me, goes and lies down. Third time, he hears a voice, goes running to Eli, Eli says to him, it's not me. This time Eli gets it and says, this must be Nevuah. This must be God. God speaks, you answer, and answer in the affirmative, Shema Hashem ki Shomea Avdecha. And then Pasuk Aleph starts the actual Nevuah. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel. And in this Nevuah, he speaks about that which he talked about to Eli. Hine anachi ose davar b'Yisrael asher kol shamot itzilenu shtei oznav. Vayom bahu akim al Eli. ואל אלי את כל אשר דיברתי על ביתו אחר וחלה, הגרתי לו כי שופט אני את ביתו עד עולם, בבון אשר ידע כי מקללים בהם בנה ולא חיה בהם. I'm going to bring terrible calamity, I'm going to bring, do something in Israel that will cause people's ears to ring, and I will punish Eli, his household, his generations, all that I promised that I will do to Eli, I will do, and this iniquity will never be forgiven, not even with all of the offerings and sacrifices. L'shbati lebet Eli, imitkaper avon bet Eli b'sevach u'mincha ad olam. Four verses: Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet. That's the nevuah. Everything else is set up to it, and the aftermath from it. Okay, that's sort of a summary of where we were up to from last week. We're gonna pick up on a couple of themes, but you did have a question.
So if there's a negative nevuah, then you have the ability to prevent it from coming about.
In theory.
The way this is stated, did that take away that option?
Right, so that's a good question.
You can defer it.
Let's defer it for now. I might get to it tonight. We might get to it next week or in 2 weeks. It's a good question. It depends to an extent. Maybe we'll even get to it in 5 minutes. It depends on what the purpose of this nevuah is. And there are different nevuot can take on different reasons, different rationale. So let's put that table. Let's put that question on the table for a moment. And we'll see when we pick it up. But we will. But let me ask you the question differently for a minute. We had this nevuah already in Perek Bet. Same question, perhaps, from a different angle. We had this nevuah already in Perek Bet. Yishe Elokim, Perek Bet, Pasuk Kav Zayin, Ve'evo Yishe Elokim, El Eli, Yishe Elokim came to Eli, And he said to him, the whole history lesson, I came to you in Mitzrayim, I revealed myself to your forefathers, to Aaron. You, what have you done? What have you corrupted? You, your sons, Chafni, Pinchas, and the nature of the Klala, much more elaborate in Perek Bet. From Pasuk Chav Zayin to Pasuk Lamed Vav. So I have 10 psukim in Perek Bet describing the destruction of the house of Eli. I have 3 psukim in Perek Gimel essentially saying the same thing with an elaborate story that goes with it. But from the perspective of the Nevuah, could have easily have gone from Perek Bet to Perek Dalet without Perek Gimel. From the perspective of the substance of the Nevuah, that on the day that your two sons die, this klala in the house of Eli will become operative and put in place, I could have easily gone from Perek Bet straight to Perek Dalet. How does Perek Dalet begin? Israel went out to war against the Plishtim. They come to Evan Ha'ezer. The Plishtim come to Evan Ha'ezer. And the Plishtim were in Afek, and there's a big war between them. Ultimately, they lose the battle. They're losing this campaign against the Plishtim. They go, they take the Aron out of Shiloh, they bring it into the battlefield, and we go from there. So, in a certain sense, Perek Gimel is redundant, unnecessary. It's valuable for the story of Shmuel, but it's not necessarily valuable as far, or significantly, or at least it would seem, as far as the story of Eli and the Nevuah to Eli. As I can describe Shmuel as having grown up and becoming a Navi, and being a great Navi, without having to repeat the Nevuah of Perek Bet.
This Nevuah was not to Eli, this Nevuah was to Shmuel.
But the message is the same Nevuah. So
but the same message is to Shmuel.
Right. So there's part of the story, and we'll come to that, I'm going to come to that last. Part of the story is that there's a, let's call it a secondary piece of it, which is that the Nevuah to Shmuel and not to Eli is intentional. It's a Nevuah to Shmuel, but really a Nevuah to Eli via Shmuel. The message to Eli, I think, is more potent than even the message to Shmuel, because the message to Eli is,
you don't get Nevuah anymore.
Right, that the Nevuah is going to Shmuel and not to Eli. That's the message to Eli. Which I think, in a certain sense, is why Shmuel keeps running to Eli to say to him what happened, and Eli finally gets the picture. I'm now out of the picture. So there's that piece of it. But in terms of the substance of the Nevuah, it's unclear that this whole perek adds much to the story of the Nevuah of the Isha Lekim and Perek Bet. And so what I wanted to look at is whether this whole perek, the Nevuat HaKdasha of Shmuel, is the end of the story of Shmuel as told to us in Perek Aleph and Bet, or is it the introduction to the Churban of Shiloh, which is told to us in Perek Dalet? What's the role? Where does this perek fit into the picture of the storyline? Why is that important? We'll see very clearly in a moment. But let's first take a look at the end of the perek, something which I sort of skipped last week when we looked at it. The last verse of Perek Gimel, something very strange that happens as we move into Perek Dalet. Yosef Hashem lehira'o b'shiloh. End of Perek Gimel, there's the reversal of this waning prophecy. The prophecy again is appearing to in Shmuel. In Shiloh. Ki nigla Hashem al Shmuel b'Shiloh b'dvar Hashem. God is revealed to Shmuel in Shiloh. Now look what happens at the beginning of Perek Dalet. Vahi dvar Shmuel l'chol Yisrael. Shmuel's word, instruction, to all of Israel. Vayitzei Yisrael likrat plishtim lemilchama. Israel went out to war against the plishtim. Had Perek Dalid started, Vayitzei Yisrael likrat plishtim lemilchama, what would be the message? And Perek Dalet started, Vayetze Yisrael Likrat Plishtim Lemilchama. What is the Navi telling us? Perek Dalet starts with? There's a war with Plishtim. There's a war with the Plishtim. But Perek Dalet doesn't start that way. Perek Dalet starts with, I would describe as a classic dangling modifier, or ambiguous, phrase, or Vayhi Dvar Hashem L'Cho Yisrael. Sorry, Dvar Shmuel L'Cho Yisrael. Vayhi Dvar Shmuel L'Cho Yisrael. Shmuel's word to all of Israel. Comma, etnachta, semicolon, paragraph break. Notice the text. Vayetze Yisrael L'Kat Plishtim. What do I do with this verse? This verse has enormous ramifications on many levels. By the way, in case you're wondering where Evan HaEzer and Afik are on the map, they're over here just opposite Ephraim, opposite Shiloh. So to get a sense of where the war between Israel and the Plishtim starts, it starts here. Now, where is here? On the tape recorder, here is due west of Shiloh on the coast. Considering that Eretz Plishtim is down here, and that all of this is Israel, and this is the heartland of Israel, and Shiloh is the place of the Mishkan, if the Plishtim are here, that's a very dangerous sign.
Is that the Yarkon there? The river there.
The Yarkon... I don't think so. I think the Arkon is here.
It's further north?
It's further north. It's near Shechem. Shiloh and Shechem is here. Let's take a look at this verse for a second. Vayihi Dvar Shmuel Lachol Yisrael Vayetzei Yisrael Likrat Plishtim. If I take that phrase and I put it on the board and I read it, it translates as?
Shmuel's word was to all of Israel.
Shmuel gave the word to all of Israel and?
And they went out to fight the
Plishtim. They went out to fight the Plishtim. Yeah. Meaning?
He told them to go.
The simplest reading of this verse is, what is the Dvar Shmuel L'cho Yisrael?
Go fight the Plishtim.
Go fight the Plishtim. Yeah. Shmuel spoke, the people listened. Vayhi Dvar Shmuel L'cho Yisrael, Vayetzei Yisrael L'kvat Plishtim. Anybody here have cooked a lot with Mefarshim?
Yeah.
No. Yes?
Okay. Didn't have a chance to photocopy this, but what I wanted to look at were two Mefarshim, Rashi and the Radak.
So the Radak there says, you know the Radak. The Radak there says, I'll put it on the board, it's very simple, three words. Excellent. Okay, do it again.
Kolmar, Tziva al Tam, Rotseif, Dvar Hashem.
Tziva al Tam, Rotseif, Dvar Hashem. What did Shmuel command them to do?
Go fight a war.
Go fight a war. Right? Go fight a war. Here's the problem. We just finished saying at the end of Perek Gimel that Shmuel was a loyal prophet to God, and that everything that Shmuel told him to do came true. Lo hipil midvarav arza. Never made a mistake. We know the story of this war.
It ends really badly.
It ends very badly. Not only does it end badly, it starts badly, which is worse. Meaning, they go to war against the Plishtim. In the first campaign, they're decimated. So they go running back to the Mishkan to pull the Aron out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because clearly they're desperate looking for, right? They're taking the Aron out of the Mishkan and bringing it into the battlefield. What are they looking for? They're looking for God, right? If they went to war because the Navi told them to, they already have God. What do they need the Mishkan for?
Are they doubting Shmuel?
It might be logical to assume if they lose the war, they might doubt Shmuel, but Shmuel's leadership is never in doubt, not before and not after. And that's the remarkable part of it. The moment the story is over, they go running to Shmuel. Now what do we do? And Shmuel says, well, now do a tshuva for the Avodah Zarah, and we'll go back and we'll do it again. And then they win the war. So the notion that the Navi would intentionally, there are many times in Tanakh where the Navi will come to the Navi and then, should I go or shouldn't I go to war? And the Navi will say, I would tell you, if you go to this war, you're going to lose. Then they'll say, well, I don't believe you anyway, I'm going to go to war, and then they lose. That's fine, that happens. But for the Navi to intentionally send them into a battle knowing that they're going to be decimated is unprecedented. Knowing they're going to be decimated?
It sounds like punishment.
Even Pelegish Begiva, they have the Urim V'Tumim, but their violation in the Urim V'Tumim was such, in the story of Pelegish Begiva of Yavish, and there too, we raise the same question, how could they go into war seemingly on the instructions of the Urim V'Tumim and then lose unless there was reason for it, right? But here, the notion that Vahid Tvar Shmuel Lachoy Yisrael Vahitzer Yikrat Yisrael Lachap Yishtim, and then they lose, they never go back to Shmuel and say, how could you have done that? As they would have logically in the case of the Urim V'Tumim. So the logical, simple reading of this Perek Talit Pasuk Aleph is enormously complicated.
But
so what's the alternative?
The fact that there's a big gap in the pasuk, in the way that it's structured, really tells you that there's a gap between that first part of the pasuk and the second.
Therefore,
part
I have to go to Rashi. And Rashi offers another possibility. This is the simple reading of the text. Right? I take out all the Masoretic issues related to Trop and to Parshiot, etc. And I go just to the text. Says Rashi, Vahi Dvar Shmuel L'Choy Yisrael. What does Rashi say? Niya hadavar. Niya hadavar. Niya hadavar. Shine amar lishmuel. What is the dvar shmuel that this pasuk is talking about? According to Vedak, it's the next line. They say so. The Kadushim. According to Rashi,
it's how this war is going to turn out.
It's the nevuah that he just had the previous.
Right. Parak. It's referring to Perek Gimel, not to Perek Dalet. That which God had spoken to Shmuel in Perek Gimel, that which was spoken earlier, Niyah Hadava Asher Diber Shmuel. Uva L'Chol Yisrael VeHechayah Puranut, and how this unfolded. Well, how does it start? Let's say Yisrael got Plishtim. Yisrael starts up with the Plishtim. They go out to war with the Plishtim. But there's no Nevuah by Shmuel that says, okay, time to go to war with the Plishtim. The Nevuah in reference here is Perek Gimel. So essentially what Rashi is saying is that the whole role of this introduction is to tell me that what we described in Perek Gimel as the Nevuah of Shmuel, that the Churban was going to take place, Vahid Dvar Shmuel, what is Dvar Shmuel? The Nevuah of the Churban, that Nevuah, here's the story. Colon, paragraph break, open story, Hitzei Yisrael Lekrat Plishtim. Which means that they didn't have a Nevuah to tell them to go to war, they didn't have a command to go to war. Vahitzei Yisrael Lekrat Plishtim is an independent piece, they go to war against the Plishtim for whatever reasons, or the Plishtim started up, it's unclear, we'll talk about that. But in all cases, Shmuel is on the sidelines until the story is over. Now, how old is Shmuel? So, a specific age we don't have, but Well, but midrashically we do, but in terms of general stage of his life at this point, early part of his life.
Didn't we say he was a nar?
He's a nar at the beginning of Perek Gimel. He grows up at the end of Perek Daled, Vayigdal.
This is, this is the final battle of Eli's life.
This is the the final battle of Eli's life. Eli is in his
90. He was shofet for 40 years.
Correct.
Because we don't know when Shmos was born within that period. But
correct. So there's a medrash in the Sedwell of Rabbah that says that Shmuel is 40. Yeah. Right. You take the assumption that he comes to he's born the year that Eli becomes a shofet, that when it says Vayeshev Vayashev Eli al Kiseh, that he sat on the throne, that means he rose to the position of the shofet. So there's a midrash that connects all these pieces. If he was shofet for 40 years, it means that Shmuel is 40 years old. But in all cases, he is Vayigdal Shmuel. Right? He's an adult. He starts Perek Gimel as a na'ar. The opening phrase, according to Rashi, of Perek Dalid says, okay, Perek Gimel is now operational. It's now implemented. Correct? How many years have taken place, how much time has taken place between Perek Gimel and Perek Dalid? That's the key question. And that, I think, is the answer to your question. How much time has taken place between Perek Gimel and Perek Dalid?
Adult life.
So if it's Shmuel's whole adult life, it means that Perek Gimel, the story of Shmuel's nevuah, as a young boy, Unar, was very early. And let's assume for the moment 30 years later, 40 years later, or 30 some odd years later, Shmuel, Israel starts this war with the Plishtim, and the nevuah goes into play. Which means that I have two nevuot, both contemporarily around the same time, one in Perek Bet, one in Perek Gimel. One, two, from the Isha Elokim, one from Shmuel. Both essentially saying the same thing. And then I have 30, 40 years in between before the story unfolds. Option A. Option B, that the Nevuah to Shmuel and the entire experience of Shmuel, forget the fact that he's 40 years old, but the entire Nevuah to Shmuel as a young boy is chronologically, Eli is already an old man, Hophni and Pinchas are running the show, Shmuel's story, his birth, is towards the end of Eli's life, and the Nevuah of Perek Gimel is chronologically juxtaposed to Perek Dalet, in which case it's basically saying
pretty close together.
Right, it's basically saying what I'm looking for is the difference between the Nevuah and Perek Gimel, Perek Bet of Isha Elokim and the Nevuah Perek Gimel of Shmuel. If they're chronologically juxtaposed to each other, meaning Perek Gimel is early, I think the message of the Nevuah is different than if the message is a week, a month, a year, even 5 years before Perek Dalet. If it's early, what's the message? If the move was early, what's the message?
There's time for them to
choose. Right. I think that comes back to the question of what's the the question that you asked. If you offer a nevuah that says, there's going to be a Chorban. It's going to be when? 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now. What value do you have saying to them, it's going to be a Chorban 30 years from now? If not, to give them some chance to fix the problem. Give them a warning. Call it a warning shot. Whereas if you offer them this nevuah a month before the Chorban, 6 years before, a year before the Chorban. And in the context of your Nevuah, you say, oh, Nishbati Lebet Eli, Michaper, there's no chance of doing tshuva for this. Right, then what's your message? What is Perek Yudalit? לכן נשבעתי לבית אלי, מתכפר עוון בית אלי בזבח ובמנחה עד עולם. I took a sworn oath, oh, לבית אלי, this will never be atoned for. This is final, this is a shvua. Can't go back on this. So if you're heir of the Chorban, what's your message?
It's too late.
It's done. You had all these years to do tshuva, it's too late. You had Isha Lakim back in Perek Bet, for all that time to do tshuva, now comes the Nevuah to Shmuel. See, look, Shechina is moving to Eli, from Eli to Shmuel. This is all going to take place. There's no choices here. We're done. Conversation is over. If it's 30 years before the Chorban, then
yeah, there's a chance to do tshuva.
Right. Then the message is, okay, I'm ready to move from a theoretical stage to an operational stage, but you still have a chance to do tshuva.
But he says he's never going to say specifically, doesn't he, Hashem, that he's never going to go back? Therefore, I've sworn concerning the house of the Lord, similarly would never be atoned for by sacrifice or meal offerings. Says that specifically, so
correct.
I don't understand where somebody gets that other possibility from. The other
well, okay, so let's.
But he said that in the first one too, didn't
right.
he?
So let's talk a little bit about Nevuah that says this is the final straw. We've crossed the line, point of no return, we're done. In biblical terms, with rare exception, what does that mean? In biblical, with rare exception, that usually means that usually mean we're done?
You can do tshuva.
Right? But usually, in biblical terms, what it usually means is, okay, you're going to accept that lying down, you're going to respond to it. Mm-hmm. With rare exception, does the nevuah of a Churban ever really mean that we've passed the point of no return? It's possible. There are moments, but even your miyau, for example, who stood on the threshold of the Beit HaMikdash and who declared Kishiloi Abayit Hazeh? What was the message? Go look at what I did to Shiloh. That's what I'm going to do here if you don't do tshuva. Erev the Churban, the night before the Churban, Yirmiyahu is still telling them to do tshuva. There's a point at which even in the Navi where he says, you've crossed the point of no return, this Gezerah is in the books. It doesn't mean this because that is in the box. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For example, the Gemara, what did the Gemara do with that sentence? The Gemara, we talked about this when we looked at the Gzera to Zaken, Loya Zaken Bevetcha, it's the Gemara, the story of Abai and Rava, where the Gemara says, oh, imit kaper avon azeh bezevach ubemincha adolam, bezevach ubemincha lo itkaper aval mitkaper betorag minut chasadim. Oh, sevach mincha, sacrifices can't bring atonement, but Torah learning and chesed, there's always some backdoor. With the rare exception is Paro by Yitzhak Mitzrayim, or where Hashem says, I'll harden his heart. You know, there are rare exceptions where the Gzeira is so intense that there's really no option. But under normal circumstances, there's always an option. And the moment that people give up the anticipation or the expectation of an option of tshuva, they've in a sense misread the purpose of nevuah.
That's what Eli does, right?
Oh, so that's very interesting. Why do you say that's what Eli does?
Throws in the towel. He just accepts it.
He throws in the towel. In what sense?
Let Hashem do whatever.
Right. Hashem,
good in his eyes.
That's right. Hashem he says to Hashem, Hashem hu atov be'enav yaseh. Hashem hu atov be'enav yaseh. God, let God do what is good in his eyes. So either that sounds like he's accepting the decree, which is a significant level of religiosity, the concept of tzidu kadin, God's decree, you accept it, this is what Hashem wants, I don't understand it, and terrible calamity to all of Klal Yisrael, but I accept that this is Hashem's decree, and I remain loyal to Hashem, right? We call that tzidu kadin. Hashem hu atov yaseh b'na, atov b'nav yaseh. On the other hand, if the message of the Nevuah is Erev the Churban, a year before the Churban, 5 years before the Churban, 20 years ago, Isha Elokim came to Eli and said, your house is going to be destroyed. Now, 20 years later, Shmuel comes along and he says, remember that Churban that you had? Remember that Nevuah that you had from the Isha Elokim? You know what God said to me? God said to me, it's like, otot. And you say, Hashem, tovu be'nav yaseh. God does whatever his eyes. He'll do whatever is good in his eyes. Essentially says, as I give up. Giving up is never a good thing. In biblical terms, giving up is never a good thing. It's a remarkable story. It's actually not about Eli. It's about Chizkiyahu HaMelech. But there's a remarkable story. It's based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu and Malachim, where Navi comes to Chizkiyahu and he says that you're going to die. Meit ata v'lo tamut. Chizkiyahu gets very sick, and the Navi comes to him and he says, you're going to die. Meit ata v'lo tamut. So he says to him, let's go on brachas. I meant to put it on the source page and I just didn't have a chance to, but I'll read it to you. I'll try to read and translate. I'll read parts of it. It says, by mimehem chalach Chizkiyahu lamut, the pasuk in the Navi, Chizkiyahu got very sick, he was going to die. Yeshayahu ben Amoz came to him and he said, tzav levetcha, go put your affairs in order, ki met ata v'lo tamut. You're going to die, you're not going to recover from this illness. What does it mean? He gives him a whole discussion about why he's going to die. He says, what is the reference to you going to die and not you're not going to live, you're going to die. So he says, you're going to die in this world, you're going to die in the next world, you're going to be punished. Why are you going to be punished? So it's a whole conversation. Why is he going to be punished? He didn't have children because he saw Baruch HaKodesh, that he was going to have a grandson whose name was Menashe. He was going to be a terrible Avodah Zarah. Navi says to him, you don't have any business looking into Ruach HaKodesh, Ba'adei Kavshid Rechman Olam Alach, this is the secrets of God, you do what you're responsible to do and don't worry about what God's going to do in the future. Then Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, pray for me. And he asks for his hand, for his daughter's hand in marriage, because maybe his schus will add to his own schus. But in the meantime, he says, "Pray for me." Yeshayahu says to him in these words, "Kvar nigzera alecha gzera." The decree is decreed. The decree is final. Met ata v'lo techya. You are going to die. To which Chizkiyahu responds and says, Ben Amoz. Ben Amoz means Yeshayahu Ben Amoz, son of Amoz. It's like calling somebody by his last name. Shulman, out. Kale nevuatcha vatse. Finish your nevuah and leave. Meaning, I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you. What do you mean, nigzira hagzira? And there's no such thing. Kach mekublani mi beit avi abba. I have the following tradition from my grandfather's house. Who's his grandfather? David. Afilu cherev chada munachat al tzavaro shel adam al yimna atzmo min harachamim. Even if there's a sword hanging over your head in the guillotine, do not give up hope of compassion from the Rabbanu Shalom, never despair. Famous line was made famous by Mordechai ben David in the song. Cherev chada munachat al tzavaro shel adam al yimna atzmo min harachamim. In other words, in the context of Nevuah, even in the Navi says, Nigzerah Hagzerah, the Gzer is done. What does that mean? It means you have to daven even more. You have to do tshuva even harder. Right? There's no such thing as it's too late. In the world of Nevuah, with the rare exception is you have to be a paro to have that kind of rare exception. But for the rest of us ordinary people, even if the Gzer is there, Erev the Churban, there's always a possibility. That was the question you asked me before. So when Eli hears this Nevuah from Shmuel and says, Hashem Watov Be'nav Yaseh, what's he doing?
He's giving up.
And that's really the avla, that's the tragedy of Eli. It's a moment of despair. It's a moment of, okay, that's it. We're done. There's nothing more I can do. And you sit there and you wonder, nothing more you could do. The whole concept of Tanakh is that there's never nothing more you can do until what is done is in the past tense. And that's part of what I think is the context of this parak. Is that the message is different from the message of Perek Bet, not in terms of substance, but in terms of timing in the message to Eli. Whereas in Perek Bet, the Nevuah was, okay, here's the tragedy of Beit Eli, here's the tragedy of Chofni Pinchas, you're going to be punished for it. Fine. When? Sometime in the future. Comes along Shmuel and says, this is it. We're into operational mode here. And then he says, "Kach Hashem hu atov beinav yaseh." That I think is a function of the despair of Eli, rather than seeing it as a moment of the opportunity for tshuva, even at the last moment. That's assuming it's a late nevuah. If it's an early nevuah, I think the message is the same. I think the message is when you translate this nevuah of Isha Lakim into a operational program, you have a responsibility that comes with that message to react to it, to respond to it, to do something about it, and Eli does not. So I think that is all part of this message to Shmuel. All right. Yeah.
So before we said that Chofni and Pinchas didn't listen to the father's voice because Hashem wanted to kill them. So it seems like a pyro situation almost, that he hardened, they didn't listen to him.
For Chofni and Pinchas, that's probably true.
So then the Nevuah has to take place, whether Eli does something or not, because Chofni and Pinchas have to be killed on the same day. That's like part of the Nevuah.
I'm still not convinced. I'm not convinced because the Nevuah doesn't talk about the fact that Chofni and Pinchas don't listen to their father. The Navi tells us Chofni and Pinchas didn't listen to their father. The Nevuah is to Eli for the way in which he chastises his sons. Right? The Gezerah on Eli is different than the Gezerah on Chofni and Pinchas. The Gzera Chofni Pinchas is one thing. The Gzera on Eli, or on the household of Eli, is a different issue altogether. And they're described in two different pieces. One is described in the Nevuah of Perek Bet. One is described in the first part of Perek Bet, and the other is the Nevuah of the Isha Elohim. I think in terms of the Gzera on Beit Eli and the Gezerah on Shiloh, which we haven't come to yet, that's the next piece of the conversation, is how this connects to Shiloh. Neither is really connected to that verse that says, V'lo shema aleihem. Ultimately, I think that that's a much bigger issue. All right.
Yeah. I assume there's a connection then between, like, taking the Yom Kippur,
after that, during Sukkot.
Correct. Same parallel. And then we're still davening to Lashon Rabba. And then, after right, and then Ni'ilo, right? We have Ni'ilo, yeah? The gates are closing. And then we have Lashon Rabba. And then we have Slach Lanu Avinu Ki Chatanu Machal Lanu Malkeinu Ki Fashanu. Every time we get up to Davening Shmona Esrei. So you're right. There is. We'd rather it, and then every time we have a fast day, Kravo and Zadinei. So, we'd much rather not have to put ourselves in a position where there is a Xavier that has to be undone, but theologically, I don't think there's ever a point in Navi, there are rarely points in Navi where the Xavier is a fait accompli, so intense, so a line drawn in the sand, so significantly, that it can't be undone. Charles, you wanted to know? You had something you wanted to know?
I'm just mulling this up in my mind that I read that when Shmuel came to Eli and told him what Hashem had said, and Eli turns around and says, Hashem will do what is good in his eyes. He's basically, as I read it, saying, yes, that's what you say Hashem said to you, but I don't really believe it. In other words, he's doubting whether he has in fact gotten the book.
That would make it even worse.
And then the rest of it I read that the people themselves are like, yes, he's a Nebuah, but we don't believe him. He's a prophet, we don't really believe it. We just, okay, you can be a prophet, we don't believe it. And therefore,
who doesn't believe it? The people don't believe that Shmuel is his prophet? How can you read that?
Well, they say that it appears in Shiloh, for Hashem appeared to Shmuel in Shiloh.
Go back one verse.
Yeah, that's it. That's one.
But go back one verse. Right? Go to Pasuk Chaf.
All of Israel said that he's a prophet of Hashem. But they didn't really believe what they said, what they say. And therefore, as much as he tried to explain and tell them, be careful, don't do this, they didn't. And all of a sudden, when they lose their first encounter with the Christian, suddenly they run. They realize maybe he was correct, and then they want to change very suddenly. But up to then, Eli also, he probably more fine.
Of Eli, believe that. Of Eli, I could accept that interpretation. Of the people, I'm not sure. I think the nature, one of the issues, one of the litmus tests of pshat, or of interpretation, is that it has to match not only the words of the text, but the tenor of the text. And the tenor of the last three verses of Perek Gimel is to recognize how beloved and elevated Shmuel was in the status in the eyes of the people. Vayigdal Shmuel, Vashem Ayayimo, God was with him. V'loipil mikol dvarav arza, everything he said came true. Vayeda Yisog midam ba'arbesheva kineman Shmuel l'navil Hashem. Everybody from north to south knew that Shmuel was a loyal prophet to God. Ne'eman, trustworthy. Neman means trustworthy. You could trust him. As a Navi, you could trust him. So to argue that they didn't believe Shmuel is a hard interpretation given the nature of that parak. You could argue they didn't, that if Shmuel told them to go to war, then they went to war and he tricked them and then he trapped them. If he didn't tell them to go to war, then that's a whole different issue. Right? Then they'll go to war without his instruction. That could very well be. Probably more likely the case than the fact that he would have told them one thing and they wouldn't have believed him. Of Eli, I could see it. He's in Perek Gimel, he's a young boy. He's talking to Shmuel, to Eli, he's telling him something terrible, and Eli says, Shema Tov Yehinav. Yes, I could hear that. Of the people, I'm not sure that I would. I hear that skepticism in their voice. I'll meet you halfway.
What does it mean? What does it mean when they say he did not cast any of his words on the ground?
It means as we talked about last week. It's an idiomatic expression, which means that nothing he said ever went. No nevuah he gave ever didn't come true.
His track record was 100%. Lo yipil mitzvah mikol dvarav arza. He had 100% track record in every nevuah. So the emphasis there, I think, would be, I think, to the other direction. Of the previous verse, of Eli's reaction, I could hear that. But of the people's, I think, it's a hard sell. All right. A couple of more pieces that I wanted to discuss in this parak. We'll start today, and then we'll finish next piece next time around. If I look at the nevuah of Shmuel himself, I look at the nevuah itself, which is three psukim: Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud. Well, four psukim: Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet. And I ask the question: fundamentally, what is Shmuel adding? Value added that we don't already know in Perek Bet. So, first we suggest perhaps nothing. Perhaps the message of Shmuel is nothing added in terms of the message, but rather timing and context. The Nevuah coming to Shmuel instead of to Eli, meaning the passing of the baton of Nevuah and leadership from one generation to the next, or that the Nevuah Perek Bet of the Yishei Elokim is operational, it's coming into play. Two possibilities. There's a third possibility. That in fact what Shmuel is coming to add is not the nevuah of the Isha Elokim or to validate the nevuah of Perek Bet, but to link the nevuah of Perek Bet to something else.
To the war with the
Pishnim. The war with the hasn't happened yet, and I'm assuming for a moment we're working off Rashi's interpretation that he's not, right, this is, let's assume for the moment we take the simple reading of the text, which is that Perek Gimel is years before Perek Dalet. Let's assume for the moment we take the simple reading of the text, forgetting for a moment the Medrash about being 40 years old, that the Perek Gimel is, he's a young boy. Perek Dalet, the war is 40 years later, or 30 years later. In the Nevuah itself, does he add anything that we haven't already heard in Perek Bet?
He says he's going to do something in Israel that when anybody hears about it, both of his ears will ring.
Right.
So that's something that's coming up that's not good.
Correct. Pasuk Yud Aleph, if you look at the Nevuah of Shmuel carefully, what you hear is that Shmuel's not repeating the Nevuah of the Yishei Elokim of Perek Bet. He's linking it to a whole different Nevuah. In Perek Bet, if you look back at that Nevuah of Perek Bet, Pasuk Chav Zayin to Lamed Vav, you can just glance it over in the Hebrew and English. Just if you look through it, there's no reference there ever to any kind of national calamity. The calamity, the punishment there is to Beit Eli, and just Beit Eli. Lachain, Pasuk Lamed, Lachain, Um, Hashem, Elokei, Yisrael, Amor, Amarti, Betchal, Vetavichi, Tachu, Lefanei, Ad Olam, Yata, Chalila, Li, Ki, Mechavdai, Achabedu, Vazei, Yekalu, Hinei, Yamin, Baim, what will happen in these days that will come? Gadaati, Yedzro, Acha, Vetzro, Vetavicha, Miyot, Zokem, Vetecha. I will cut your seed down. This is a gzera against the house of Eli, and just the house of Eli. There's no reference beyond the discussion of Eli's household, except for a time frame. When will all this occur? What will be the sign to you that this onesh is now implemented? The death of Chofni Pinchas. And the death of Chofni Pinchas on the same day is a symbol of, it's an ot that the Puranut on Beit Eli is now in place. That's all Perek Bet says. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel, Hinei Anochi Aseh Davar BeYisrael, Asher Kol Shomaot Titzilena Shtei Oznav. Behold, I'm going to do something in Israel. All who hear about it, Titzilena Shtei Oznav, the ears will burn. We don't know what that is. Vayom Hahu, Bayom hahu akim el eli et kol asher dibarti al beito. When I do what I threaten to do in Pasuk Yud Aleph, on that day, what will I do? On that day, I will.
He'll fulfill the previous prophecy right. as well.
That's exactly right.
That's the chiddush. There's three different issues in these two nevuot. There's Eli. There's Hophni and Pinchas, so let's call them Bnei Eli. And then there is? The Nevuah to Beit Eli. This is Perek Bet. The Nevuah of Ish. This is Beit Eli. Whereas the death of Hophni and Pinchas is a symbol. It's a sign. It's an ot. That's Perek Tzav. Comes along Perek Gimel, and Shmuel says, Hinei Anochi Oseh Davar B'Yisrael Asher Kol Shem'o Tzilena Shtei. I'm going to do something to Israel.
Does it say to Israel or in Israel or with Israel?
Fair. I'll leave it open. Something's going to happen. Hene ani oseh davar b'Yisrael. Which is described thus. When I do, b'yom hahu, I will then fulfill that which I said to. So that the message of Shmuel's Nevuah is not the message of a repeat of the Nevuah Beit Eli. The message of Shmuel is a whole new concept. We haven't heard this yet. We don't know what this is. Or whatever it is, it's big. And that's going to be the moment when the Gzeira of Beit Eli is going to take place. So essentially I have three different things. I have the death of Hophni and Pinchas as a trigger to the Gzeira of Beit Eli, and whatever is happening by Yom Ahu in Israel as the trigger to the death of the sons of the death of Hophni and Pinchas as the trigger to Beit Eli. You follow that sequence? So now the question is, what is it that is going to take place that is described as Hinei Ani Oseh Davar B'Yisrael Asher Kol Shom'o Tetzilena Shtei Oznav?
I still don't understand why what he's going to do to Eli and Beit Eli is not going to make Israel's ears ring.
Because that's not nearly as significant as what's going to happen next. To a Beit Eli, the punishment to Beit Eli is bad, but it's not nearly as significant as what's about to describe, as what he's about to describe.
But
where do I get that from?
Exactly, that's what I don't understand. Where you get that from?
Okay, so let's take a look at this phrase. That phrase, right, that phrase itself, the notion that something's going to happen that's going to be so bad that just ears are going to ring just hearing about it, appears three times in all of Tanakh. In exactly the same context, it appears three places in all of Tanakh. I'll show you what they are, and you'll understand exactly what I mean. The first is in Malachim Bet, Perek Chaf Aleph. Well, the first is by us, but the first post, I should say, for Shmuel, is Malachim Bet, Perek Chaf Aleph.
Oh,
Starting with Pasuk, this is the story of Menashe and the Navi comes to Menashe and he tells him the following. Starting with Pasuk Yud Bet. Lachen ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This is the Navi speaking to Menashe. We could go back a little bit and I want to go back a little bit, get a sense of the context. Start from the beginning of the parak. Ben 12 shana Menashe b'malcho. Menashe starts as a young man when he rises to the throne. V'chamishim v'chamesh shana malach b'Yerushalayim. V'shem imo Chefziba. 55 years he reigned in Yerushalayim. That's a long time for a king in Israel, especially an evil king. He did evil in the eyes of God, according to the abominations and equal to the abominations of the Gentile nations whose land he had taken. Chizkiah was his father, grandfather. He built all the rebuilt all of the high places, which meaning the idolatrous altars that Chizkiah had destroyed. He restored the idolatry of Baal. Asherah, k'mo shasa Achav, reestablished the culture of Achav and Izebel. Ve'ishtachol chotzva Hashemayim, bow down to all of the stars, all of the constellations of heaven. Benamiz Bachot built all kinds of altars in the temple. Take a look at Pasuk Vav. Vehevir et beno be'esh ve'onen v'nichesh ve'asa'ov yidonim. In a sense of Menashe's depth of depravity, just need to read these Pasukim. Hevir et beno be'esh, that's the idolatry of Molech. Onen v'nichesh, soothsaying I don't know how to translate all of these various Ov and Yidoni. Hirba la'asot ra b'nei Hashem l'hachis, placed the pesel and the Asherah and into the temple itself. Skip down to violated all the laws of the Torah. God sent Nevi'im to Menashe, saying to him, Yan Asher Asam Menashe Mikol Yudah HaToevot Melech Yudah HaToevot Ela Haram Mikol Asher Asuha Emoriya Shelefanav. Menashe was worse than all of the Amorites before him. Forget the Israel kings. Worse than all the Amorite kings. Ve'achti gam et Yehudah Begilulav. He caused Israel to sin in his abominations. Lachen ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Hineni mevi ra'ah al Yerushalayim v'Yehuda. We're going to bring a decree against Yerushalayim. What decree are we talking about? Bring a decree against Yerushalayim. What are we talking about? Asher ko shom'a titzalna shtei oznav. Calamity that will cause people's ears to ring. Venatiti al Yerushalayim et kav shomron ve'et mishkolet bet achav. I will do to Yerushalayim what I did to the Shomron. The Shomron has already gone into exile. The Shomron has been destroyed. I will do to Yerushalayim what I did to Shomron. Why did I destroy the Shomron? Shomron was a korban. All the Jews of the Shomron went into exile or were killed. The entire Malchus was eradicated. Why did Hashem destroy Shomron? Because of the idolatry brought about by the house of Achav. ונתיתי את ירושלים, את קו שומרון, ואת משקולת בית אחאב. ומחיתי את ירושלים, כאשר עמך הצלחת מחה והפך על פניה. I will clean ירושלים like you clean your plate. ונטשתי את שארית נחלתי. I will wipe out, I will abandon the remnant of my inheritance. ונתתים ביד אויביהם, I'll give them into the hands of the enemies. והיו לבז ולמשיסה לכל אויביהם. יען אשר עשו את הרע בעיניי, והיו מכעיסים אותי מן היום אשר יצאו אבותם ממצרים ועד ליום הזה. This is payback for 500, almost 1,000 years of idolatry. The destruction of Yerushalayim, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the destruction of the Churban and of the Malchus. Minei Anu Yaseh Devar B'Yisrael Asher Kol Shom'a Titzilena Shtei Oznav. The only other place this phrase appears is in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu Perek Yud Tet.
You know what's funny?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're introducing that pasuk though in Shmuel Aleph without any context. So you're having to go right into the future.
That's the way Tanakh works. I want to understand the meaning of the phrase. Understand the meaning of the phrase, I can do two things. I can look at the first place it appears, and I can look at every place it appears. So give me the same thing. So now, and then I'll work my way backwards. Once I understand what how the phrase is used in two out of its three contexts, and then I apply it here, it's not hard to figure out what's going on.
What's intended.
Right.
But when God... But at the time of the prophecy, when it's given,
they probably
have no context to understand what that means.
We have that's true, but we have enough of a context to know that we're talking about something big. It's not a phrase that's used lightly. It hasn't been used in Sefer Shmuel, in Sefer Shoftim, and that's 400 years of history. So it's a phrase that's been used by a Navi for the first time in 400 years, and it will be used again 400 years later for the destruction of, to describe the Churban of Yerushalayim.
It's not used for the time of Noah.
Right. Well, Noah is a different issue, but in terms of the Nevi'im and Malchut Yisrael, it's not a phrase that's going to describe the calamity to Beit Eli, for example. Right? That's local. That's personal. That's household. That's right, that we've had before. That's not going to be described in those kinds of terms. These kinds of terms are reserved for national calamities, for moments that are watershed, paradigm shift calamities in Israel. Take a look at Perek Yud Tet, Yirmiyahu.
You didn't tell you that.
Yud Tet. כלומר השם הלוך וקנית בקבוק יוצר חרס ומזקני העם ומזקני הכהנים. ימיהו did a lot of things that were sort of very demonstrative of the messages of his נבואה. Go out, ימיהו פרק י"ט, פסוק ב', ויצאת אל גיא בן הינום. Go out into the valley of Ben Hinnom. What's the valley of Ben Hinnom? Gehenna. Right? Sometimes hot as Gehenna. What was Gei Ben Hinnom? One of the three valleys that make up three of the four sides of Yerushalayim. It's called the Valley of Ben Hinnom, which in its original name was not a particularly bad thing. What was significant about Gei Ben Hinnom? It was into that valley that they placed the temple of Molech, or the altar to Molech. That was where the child sacrifice rituals were set up in the Valley of Ben Hinnom, just beneath the Beit HaMikdash. So the smoke of the furnace of Ben Hinnom would go up into Yerushalayim.
Is that where Yad Avshalom is? Is that where that is?
Yad Avshalom and Gei Ben Hinnom?
Is that where it is?
Anyway, it gave birth to the rabbinic name Gehenom. Gehenom, Gehenom. I guess it gave birth to the notion of the fires of Gehenom as well, because it was an idolatry of Molech. What are you going to say there? You're going to say the following. Yirmiyahu was the Navi of the Churban. V'yamarta, Shimu dvar Hashem al chay Yehuda v'yoshvei Yerushalayim. Ko amar Hashem tzvakot, Elokei Yisrael, hineni mevi ra'a al makom azeh, asher kol shama titzalna oznav. Yan asher azavuni v'inaku et hamakom azeh, they have abandoned me, they have made strange this place, they have offered to different idols, v'yikturu lo lelim acharim asher liyadu'um hema v'avotahem v'achay Yehuda, umalu et hamakom azeh dam nekiyim, they have filled this place with innocent blood. ובנו במות הבעל לשרוף את בניהם באש עולות לבעל to burn their children in the fires of בעל אשר לא ציוויתי ולא דיברתי ולא עלתה ליבי לכן הנה ימים באים נאום השם ולא יקרא למקום הזה עוד התופת וגי בן אינום they will come when they will no longer call this place the תופת of בן אינום but rather כי אם גי ההרגה the valley of murders of killing הרגה That will be the battle that will take place, and I will fill this valley with their carcasses, etc. And the rest of the story I'm going to leave. That's Asher Koshama Titzal Nashteosnav. It's a phrase that is not used lightly in Tanakh. It's used to describe the calamity of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It's used to describe the calamity of the destruction of the Shomron. And in its first reference, it's used to describe what is coming. And what's coming in Perek Dalet is the Churban of Shiloh. And that's the line that's drawn. What Shmuel is talking about is the Churban of Shiloh. Hine ani oseh davar b'Yisrael asher ko shema titzal l'shtei oznav. This is a message of Churban Shiloh. That's never been talked about yet. In all of the story of Parak Aleph and Bet, all we've talked about is Eli, Chofni Pinchas, and the Gzeret to House of Eli. What Shmuel's talking about is, there's a much bigger Chorban taking place. The bigger Chorban taking place is the Chorban of Shiloh. And your story of Beit Eli is going to be a prat, a detail, a piece of the puzzle in that calamity. But let's expand the picture for a second. We've talked about Chofni Pinchas, we've talked about Eli, now we're talking about the real story. And the real story is the imminent destruction of Shiloh. Hinei ani aseh davar b'Yisrael asher kol shamot titzal l'shtei oznav. So if I look at it from that perspective, that's really the message of Shmuel. The message of Shmuel is that Shmuel's nevuah isn't about Beit Eli. Shmuel's nevuah is about the Churban. Which explains why Rashi's opening statement to Perek Dalet is, Vayhi dvash mishmuel l'choy Yisrael, the nevuah of Shmuel now became went into effect. How? Rest of Perek Dalet and Hay. There's the opening statement to Perek Dalet is essentially saying that which Shmuel spoke about, which isn't about the Beit Eli. It's about the story of Shiloh. That's the story of unfolding in Perek Dalet. Okay? We're going to stop here. The one last piece that I wanted to look at in this story was what links the Churban of Shiloh to the Gzera on Beit Eli per se. Why does Shmuel link the two? There's a linkage that's taking place. Shmuel could have just as well have said, "Hinei ani aseh davar b'Yisrael asher kol shamat titzal l'shtei oznav." Period. And that would have been Shmuel's nevuah. Shmuel's nevuah would have been the destruction of Shiloh. It's only one part of it. The other part of it is Bayamahu. I will link the two. So now the question is that we're going to address next class will be why that link. So we will, Bezrat Hashem, do that in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you. Okay.